spear shall be shaken, shield be splintered, a sword day, a red day, ere the sun rises. Ride now, ride now, ride to Gondor!" With that he seized a great horn from Guthlaf, his banner-bearer, and he blew such a blast upon it that it burst asunder, and straightway all the horns in the host were lifted up in music, and the blowing of the horns of Rohan in that hour was like a storm upon the plain and a thunder in the mountains. "Ride now! Ride now! Ride to Gondor!" Suddenly the king cried to Snowmane, and the horse sprang away. Behind him his banner blew in the wind, white horse upon a field of green, but he outpaced it. After him thundered the knights of his house, but he was ever before them. Aelma rode there, the white horse tail on his helm floating in his speed, and the front of the first Eorid roared like a breaker foaming to the shore, but Theoden could not be overtaken. Fey he seemed, or the battle-fury of his fathers ran like new fire in his veins, and he was borne up on Snowmane like a god of old, even as Orome the Great in the Battle of the Valar when the world was young. His golden shield was uncovered, and lo, it shone like an image of the sun, and the grass flamed into green about the white feet of his steed. For morning came, morning and a wind from the sea, and the darkness was removed, and the hosts of Mordor wailed, and terror took them, and they fled, and died, and the hooves of wrath rode over them. And then all the host of Rohan burst into song, and they sang as they slew, for the joy of battle was on them, and the sound of their singing that was fair and terrible came even to the city. Chapter 6. The Battle of the Pelennor Fields. But it was no orc chieftain or brigand that led the assault upon Gondor. The darkness was breaking too soon, before the date that his master had set for it. Fortune had betrayed him for the moment, and the world had turned against him. Victory was slipping from his grasp, even as he stretched out his hand to seize it. But his arm was long. He was still in command, wielding great powers. King, Ringwraith, Lord of the Nazgul, he had many weapons. He left the gate and vanished. Theoden, King of the Mark, had reached the road from the gate to the river, and he turned towards the city that was now less than a mile distant. He slackened his speed a little, seeking new foes, and his knights came about him, and Daernhelm was with them. Ahead, near the walls, Elfhelm's men were among the siege engines, hewing, slaying, driving their foes into the fire pits. Well nigh all the northern half of the Pelennor was overrun, and their camps were blazing. Orcs were flying towards the river like herds before the hunters, and the Rohirrim went hither and thither at their will. But they had not yet overthrown the siege, nor won the gate. Many foes stood before it, and on the further half of the plain were other hosts, still unfought. Southward beyond the road lay the main force of the Haradrim, and there their horsemen were gathered about the standard of their chieftain. And he looked out, and in the growing light he saw the banner of the king, and that it was far ahead of the battle with few men about it. Then he was filled with a red wrath, and shouted aloud, and displaying his standard, black serpent upon scarlet, he came against the white horse and the green with great press of men, and the drawing of the scimitars of the Southrons was like a glitter of stars. Then Theoden was aware of him, and would not wait for his onset. But crying to Snowmane, he charged headlong to greet him. Great was the clash of their meeting, but the white fury of the Northmen burned the hotter, and more skilled was their knighthood with long spears and bitter. Fewer were they, but they clove through the Southrons like a firebolt in a forest. Right through the press drove Theoden, Thingol's son, and his spear was shivered as he threw down their chieftain. Out swept his sword, and he spurred to the standard, hewed staff and bearer, and the black serpent foundered. Then all that was left unslain of their cavalry turned and fled far away. But lo! Suddenly, in the midst of the glory of the king, his golden shield was dimmed. The new morning was blotted from the sky. Dark fell about him. Horses reared and screamed. Men cast from the saddle lay grovelling on the ground.
"To me! To me!" cried Theoden. "Up, Eorlingus! Fear no darkness!"
But Snowmane, wild with terror, stood up on high, fighting with the air, and then with a great scream he crashed upon his side. A black dart had pierced him. The king fell beneath him. The great shadow descended like a falling cloud, and behold, it was a winged creature. If bird, then greater than all other birds, and it was naked, and neither quill nor feather did it bear, and its vast pinions were as webs of hide between horned fingers, and it stank. A creature of an older world, maybe it was, whose kind, lingering in forgotten mountains, cold beneath the moon, outstayed their day, and in hideous aerie bred this last untimely brood, apt to evil. And the Dark Lord took it, and nursed it with fell meats, until it grew beyond the measure of all other things that fly, and he gave it to his servant to be his steed. Down, down it came, and then, folding its fingered webs, it gave a croaking cry, and settled upon the body of Snowmane, digging in its claws, stooping its long, naked neck. Upon it sat a shape, black-mantled, huge and threatening. A crown of steel he bore, but between rim and robe naught was there to see, save only a deadly gleam of eyes. The Lord of the Nazgul. To the air he had returned, summoning his steed ere the darkness failed, and now he was come again, bringing ruin, turning hope to despair, and victory to death. A great black mace he wielded. But Theoden was not utterly forsaken. The knights of his house lay slain about him, or else, mastered by the madness of their steeds, were borne far away. Yet one stood there still. Dernhelm the young, faithful beyond fear, and he wept, for he had loved his lord as a father. Right through the charge, Merry had been borne unharmed behind him, until the shadow came. And then Windfaller had thrown them in his terror, and now ran wild upon the plain. Merry crawled on all fours like a dazed beast, and such a horror was on him that he was blind and sick. "King's man, King's man," his heart cried within him, "you must stay by him. As a father you shall be to me," you said. But his will made no answer, and his body shook. He dared not open his eyes or look up. Then out of the blackness in his mind he thought that he heard Dernhelm speaking. Yet now the voice seemed strange, recalling some other voice that he had known. "Begone, foul Dwimmerlaik, lord of Carrion, leave the dead in peace." A cold voice answered, "Come not between the Nazgul and his prey, or he will not slay thee in thy turn. He will bear thee away to the houses of lamentation beyond all darkness, where thy flesh shall be devoured, and thy shrivelled mind be left naked to the lidless eye." A sword rang as it was drawn. "Do what you will, but I will hinder it, if I may."
"Hinder me, thou fool! No living man may hinder me."
Then Merry heard of all sounds in that hour the strangest. It seemed that Dernhelm laughed, and the clear voice was like the ring of steel. "But no living man am I. You look upon a woman. Eowyn I am, Eomund's daughter. You stand between me and my lord and kin. Begone, if you be not deathless, for living or dark undead, I will smite you if you touch him." The winged creature screamed at her, but the ringwraith made no answer, and was silent, as if in sudden doubt. Very amazement for a moment conquered Merry's fear. He opened his eyes, and the blackness was lifted from them. There, some paces from him, sat the great beast, and all seemed dark about it,
and above it loomed the Nazgul lord like a shadow of despair. A little to the left, facing them, stood she whom he had called Dernhelm. But the helm of her secrecy had fallen from her, and her bright hair, released from its bonds, gleamed with pale gold upon her shoulders. Her eyes, grey as the sea, were hard and fell, and yet tears were on her cheek. A sword was in her hand, and she raised her shield against the horror of her enemy's eyes. Eowyn it was, and Dernhelm also. For into Merry's mind flashed the memory of the face that he saw at the riding from Dunharrow. The face of one that goes seeking death, having no hope. Pity filled his heart, and great wonder, and suddenly the slow kindled courage of his race awoke. He clenched his hand. She should not die, so fair, so desperate. At least she should not die alone, unaided. The face of their enemy was not turned towards him, but still he hardly dared to move, dreading lest the deadly eyes should fall on him. Slowly, slowly he began to crawl aside, but the black captain, in doubt and malice intent upon the woman before him, heeded him no more than a worm in the mud. Suddenly the great beast beat its hideous wings, and the wind of them was foul. Again it leapt into the air, and then swiftly fell down upon Eowyn, shrieking, striking with beak and claw. Still she did not blench. Maiden of the Rohirrim, child of kings, slender but as a steel blade, fair but terrible. A swift stroke she dealt, skilled and deadly. The outstretched neck she clove asunder, and the hewn head fell like a stone. Backward she sprang, as the huge shape crashed to ruin, vast wings outspread, crumpled on the earth, and with its fall the shadow passed away. A light fell about her, and her hair shone in the sunrise. Out of the wreck rose the black rider, tall and threatening, towering above her, with a cry of hatred that stung the very ears like venom he let fall his mace. Her shield was shivered in many places, and her arm was broken. She stumbled to her knees. He bent over her like a cloud, and his eyes glittered. He raised his mace to kill. But suddenly he too stumbled forward with a cry of bitter pain, and his stroke went wide, driving into the ground. Merry's sword had stabbed him from behind, shearing through the black mantle, and passing up beneath the hauberk, had pierced the sinew behind his mighty knee. "Eowyn! Eowyn!" cried Merry. Then, tottering, struggling up, with her last strength she drove her sword between crown and mantle as the great shoulders bowed before her. The sword broke sparkling into many shards. The crown rolled away with a clang. Eowyn fell forward upon her fallen foe. But lo! The mantle and hauberk were empty. Shapeless they lay now on the ground, torn and tumbled, and a cry went up into the shuddering air, and faded to a shrill wailing, passing with the wind, a voice bodiless and thin that died, and was swallowed up, and was never heard again in that age of this world. And there stood Meriadoc the hobbit in the midst of the slain, blinking like an owl in the daylight, for tears blinded him. And through a mist he looked on Eowyn's fair head, as she lay and did not move. And he looked on the face of the king, fallen in the midst of his glory. For Snowmane in his agony had rolled away from him again, yet he was the bane of his master. Then Merry stooped and lifted his hand to kiss it, and lo! Theoden opened his eyes, and they were clear, and he spoke in a quiet voice, though laboured. "Farewell, Master Hulbitler," he said. "My body is broken. I go to my father's, and even in their mighty company I shall not now be ashamed. I felled the black serpent, a grim morn, and a glad day, and a golden sunset." Merry could not speak, but wept anew. "Forgive me, Lord," he said at last, "if I broke your command, and yet have done no more in your service than to weep at our parting." The old king smiled.
Grieve not, it is forgiven. Great heart will not be denied. Live now in blessedness, and when you sit in peace with your pipe, think of me. For never now shall I sit with you in Meadowseld, as I promised, or listen to your herb lore. He closed his eyes, and Mary bowed beside him. Presently he spoke again. Where is Aylmer? For my eyes darken, and I would see him ere I go. He must be king after me, and I would send word to Eowyn. She would not have me leave her, and now I shall not see her again, dearer than daughter. Lord, Lord, began Mary brokenly, she is— But at that moment there was a great clamour, and all about them horns and trumpets were blowing. Mary looked round. He had forgotten the war, and all the world beside, and many hours it seemed since the king rode to his fall, though in truth it was only a little while. But now he saw that they were in danger of being caught in the very midst of the great battle that would soon be joined. New forces of the enemy were hastening up the road from the river, and from under the walls came the legions of Morgul. And from the southward fields came footmen of Harad, with horsemen before them, and behind them rose the huge backs of the Mumakil, with war towers upon them. But northward the white crest of Aylmer led the great front of the Rohirrim, which he had again gathered and marshalled, and out of the city came all the strength of men that was in it. And the silver swan of Dal Amroth was borne in the van, driving the enemy from the gate. For a moment the thought flitted through Mary's mind, where is Gandalf? Isn't he here? Could he not have saved the king and Eowyn? But thereupon Eomer rode up in haste, and with him came the knights of the household that still lived and had now mastered their horses. They looked in wonder at the carcass of the fell beast that lay there, and their steeds would not go near. But Eomer leapt from the saddle, and grief and dismay fell upon him as he came to the king's side and stood there in silence. Then one of the knights took the king's banner from the hand of Guthlaf, the banner-bearer who lay dead, and he lifted it up. Slowly Theoden opened his eyes. Seeing the banner, he made a sign that it should be given to Eomer.
"Hail, King of the Mark," he said. "Ride now to victory. Bid Eowyn farewell."
And so he died, and knew not that Eowyn lay near him. And those who stood by wept, crying, "Theoden King! Theoden King!" But Eomer said to them, "Mourn not overmuch. Mighty was the fallen. Meet was his ending. When his mound is raised, women then shall weep. War now calls us." Yet he himself wept as he spoke. "Let his knights remain here," he said, "and bear his body in honour from the field, lest the battle ride over it. Yea, and all these other of the king's men that lie here." And he looked at the slain, recalling their names. Then suddenly he beheld his sister Eowyn as she lay, and he knew her. He stood a moment as a man who is pierced in the midst of a cry by an arrow through the heart. And then his face went deathly white, and a cold fury rose in him, so that all speech failed him for a while. A fey mood took him.
"Eowyn! Eowyn!" he cried at last. "Eowyn! How come you here? What madness or devilry is this?
Death! 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 Death take us all!"
Then, without taking counsel or waiting for the approach of the men of the city, he spurred headlong back to the front of the great host, and blew a horn, and cried aloud for the onset. Over the field rang his clear voice, calling, "Death! Ride! Ride to ruin and the world's ending!" And with that the host began to move. But the Rohirrim sang no more, "Death!
they cried with one voice loud and terrible, and gathering speed like a great tide, their battle swept about their fallen king and passed, roaring away southwards. And still Meriadoc the hobbit stood there blinking through his tears, and no one spoke to him. Indeed, none seemed to heed him. He brushed away the tears, and stooped to pick up the green shield that Eowyn had given him, and he slung it at his back. Then he looked for his sword that he had let fall. For even as he struck his blow his arm was numbed, and now he could only use his left hand. And behold, there lay his weapon, but the blade was smoking like a dry branch that has been thrust in a fire, and as he watched it, it writhed and withered and was consumed. So passed the sword of the Barrow-Downs, work of Westerness. But glad would he have been to know its fate, who wrought it slowly long ago in the North Kingdom when the Dúnedain were young, and chief among their foes was the dread realm of Angmar and its sorcerer king. No other blade, not though mightier hands had wielded it, would have dealt that foe a wound so bitter, cleaving the undead flesh, breaking the spell that knit his unseen sinews to his will. Men now raised the king, and laying cloaks upon spear truncheons, they made shift to bear him away towards the city. And others lifted Eowyn gently up and bore her after him. But the men of the king's household they could not yet bring from the field, for seven of the king's knights had fallen there, and Deawine, their chief, was among them. So they laid them apart from their foes and the fell beast, and set spears about them. And afterwards, when all was over, men returned and made a fire there, and burned the carcass of the beast. But for Snowmane they dug a grave and set up a stone upon which was carved in the tongues of Gondor and the mark: "Faithful servant, yet master's bane, Lightfoot's foal, swift Snowmane." Green and long grew the grass on Snowmane's how, but ever black and bare was the ground where the beast was burned. Now slowly and sadly Merry walked beside the bearers, and he gave no more heed to the battle. He was weary and full of pain, and trembled as with a chill. A great rain came out of the sea, and it seemed that all things wept for Théoden and Eowyn, quenching the fires in the city with grey tears. It was through a mist that presently he saw the van of the men of Gondor approaching. Imrahil, prince of Dol Amroth, rode up and drew rein before them. "What burden do you bear, men of Rohan?" he cried. "Théoden, king," they answered. "He is dead. But Éomé, king, now rides in the battle, he with a white crest in the wind." Then the prince went from his horse and knelt by the bier in honour of the king and his great onset, and he wept. And rising, he looked then on Eowyn and was amazed. "Surely here is a woman," he said. "Have even the women of the Rohirrim come to war in our need?" "Nay, one only," they answered. "The lady Eowyn is she, sister of Éomer, and we knew naught of her riding until this hour, and greatly we rue it." Then the prince, seeing her beauty, though her face was pale and cold, touched her hand as he bent to look more closely on her. "Men of Rohan," he cried, "are there no leeches among you? She is hurt, to the death maybe, but I deem that she yet lives." And he held the bright burnished vambrace that was upon his arm before her cold lips, and behold, a little mist was laid on it, hardly to be seen. "Haste is now needed," he said, and he sent one riding back swiftly to the city to bring aid. But he, bowing low to the fallen, bade them farewell, and mounting, rode away into battle. And now the fighting waxed furious on the fields of the Pelennor, and the din of arms rose upon high, with the crying of men and the neighing of horses. Horns were blown, and trumpets were braying, and the Mumakil were bellowing as they were goaded to war.
Under the south walls of the city, the footmen of Gondor now drove against the legions of Morgul that were still gathered there in strength. But the horsemen rode eastward to the succour of Éomer. Húrin the Tall, Warden of the Keys, and the Lord of Lasarnach, and Hirluin of the Green Hills, and Prince Imrahil the Fair, with his knights all about him. Not too soon came their aid to the Rohirrim, for fortune had turned against Éomer, and his fury had betrayed him. The great wrath of his onslaught had utterly overthrown the front of his enemies, and great wedges of his riders had passed clear through the ranks of the Southrons, discomfiting their horsemen and riding their footmen to ruin. But wherever the Mumakil came there, the horses would not go, but blenched and swerved away, and the great monsters were unfought, and stood like towers of defence, and the Haradrim rallied about them. And if the Rohirrim at their onset were thrice outnumbered by the Haradrim alone, soon their case became worse, for new strength came streaming to the field out of Osgiliath. There they had been mustered for the sack of the city and the rape of Gondor, waiting on the call of their captain. He now was destroyed, but Gothmog, the lieutenant of Morgul, had flung them into the fray. Easterlings with axes, and Variags of Khand, Southrons in scarlet, and out of far Harad, black men like half-trolls with white eyes and red tongues. Some now hastened up behind the Rohirrim, others held westward to hold off the forces of Gondor and prevent their joining with Rohan. It was even as the day thus began to turn against Gondor and their hope wavered, that a new cry went up in the city, it being then mid-morning, and a great wind blowing, and the rain flying north, and the sun shining. In that clear air watchmen on the walls saw afar a new sight of fear, and their last hope left them. For Anduin, from the bend at the Harlond, so flowed that from the city men could look down it lengthwise for some leagues, and the far-sighted could see any ships that approached. And looking thither they cried in dismay, for black against the glittering stream they beheld a fleet borne up on the wind, Dromunds, and ships of great draught with many oars, and with black sails bellying in the breeze. "The corsairs of Umbar!" men shouted. "The corsairs of Umbar! Look! The corsairs of Umbar are coming! So Belfalas is taken, and the Aethir, and Lebenin is gone. The corsairs are upon us. It is the last stroke of doom." And some without order, for none could be found to command them in the city, ran to the bells and told the alarm, and some blew the trumpet, sounding the retreat. "Back to the walls!" they cried. "Back to the walls! Come back to the city before all are overwhelmed!" But the wind that sped the ships blew all their clamour away. The Rohirrim indeed had no need of news or alarm. All too well they could see for themselves the black sails. For Éomer was now scarcely a mile from the Harlond, and a great press of his foes was between him and the haven there, while new foes came swirling behind, cutting him off from the prince. Now he looked to the river, and hope died in his heart, and the wind that he had blessed he now called accursed. But the hosts of Mordor were enheartened, and filled with a new lust and fury they came yelling to the onset. Stern now was Éomer's mood, and his mind clear again. He let blow the horns to rally all men to his banner that could come thither, for he thought to make a great shield-wall at the last, and stand, and fight there on foot till all fell, and do deeds of song on the fields of Pelennor, though no man should be left in the west to remember the last king of the Mark. So he rode to a green hillock, and there set his banner, and the white horse ran rippling in the wind. "Out of doubt, out of dark to the day's rising, I came singing in the sun, sword unsheathing. To hope's end I rode, and to heart's breaking. Now for wrath, now for ruin and a red nightfall." These staves he spoke, yet he laughed as he said them, for once more lust of battle was on him, and he was still unscathed, and he was young, and he was king, the lord of a fell people. And lo,
Even as he laughed at despair, he looked out again on the black ships, and he lifted up his sword to defy them. And then wonder took him, and a great joy, and he cast his sword up in the sunlight and sang as he caught it. And all eyes followed his gaze, and behold, upon the foremost ship a great standard broke, and the wind displayed it as she turned towards the Harland. There flowered a white tree, and that was for Gondor. But seven stars were about it, and a high crown above it, the signs of Elendil that no lord had borne for years beyond count. And the stars flamed in the sunlight, for they were wrought of gems by Arwen, daughter of Elrond, and the crown was bright in the morning, for it was wrought of mithril and gold. Thus came Aragorn, son of Arathorn, Elessar, Isildur's heir, out of the paths of the dead, borne upon a wind from the sea to the kingdom of Gondor, and the mirth of the Rohirrim was a torrent of laughter and a flashing of swords, and the joy and wonder of the city was a music of trumpets and a ringing of bells. But the hosts of Mordor were seized with bewilderment, and a great wizardry it seemed to them that their own ship should be filled with their foes, and a black dread fell on them, knowing that the tides of fate had turned against them, and their doom was at hand. East rode the knights of Dol Amroth, driving the enemy before them, trollmen and variags and orcs that hated the sunlight. South strode Éomer, and men fled before his face, and they were caught between the hammer and the anvil. For now men leapt from the ships to the quays of the Harland, and swept north like a storm. There came Legolas, and Gimli wielding his axe, and Halbarad with a standard, and Eladan and Elrohir with stars on their brow, and the Dúrhanded Dunedain, rangers of the north, leading a great valour of the folk of Lebennin and Lamedon and the fiefs of the south. But before all went Aragorn with a flame of the west, Andúril like a new fire kindled, Narsil reforged as deadly as of old, and upon his brow was the star of Elendil. And so at length Éomer and Aragorn met in the midst of the battle, and they leaned on their swords and looked on one another and were glad. "Thus we meet again, though all the hosts of Mordor lay between us," said Aragorn. "Did I not say so at the Hornburg?" "So you spoke," said Éomer, "but hope oft deceives, and I knew not then that you were a man foresighted. Yet twice blessed is help unlooked for, and never was a meeting of friends more joyful." And they clasped hand in hand. "Nor indeed more timely," said Éomer. "You come none too soon, my friend. Much loss and sorrow has befallen us."
"Then let us avenge it ere we speak of it," said Aragorn, and they rode back to battle together.
Hard fighting and long labour they had still, for the Southrons were bold men and grim, and fierce in despair, and the Easterlings were strong and war-hardened and asked for no quarter. And so in this place and that, by burned homestead or barn, upon hillock or mound, under wall or on field, still they gathered and rallied and fought until the day wore away. Then the sun went at last behind Myndolwyn, and filled all the sky with a great burning, so that the hills and the mountains were dyed as with blood. Fire glowed in the river, and the grass of the Pelennor lay red in the nightfall. And in that hour the great battle of the field of Gondor was over, and not one living foe was left within the circuit of the Ramas. All were slain save those who fled to die or to drown in the red foam of the river. Few ever came eastward to Morgul or Mordor, and to the land of the Haradrim came only a tale from far off, a rumour of the wrath and terror of Gondor. Aragorn and Éomer and Imrahil rode back towards the gate of the city, and they were now weary beyond joy or sorrow. These three were unscathed, for such was their fortune and the skill and might of their arms, and few indeed had dared to abide them or look on their faces in the hour of their wrath. But many others were hurt or maimed or dead upon the field. The axes hewed Forlong as he fought alone and unhorsed,
and both Duelin of Morthond and his brother were trampled to death when they assailed the Mumakil, leading their bowmen close to shoot at the eyes of the monsters. Neither Heerluin the Fair would return to Pinnath Gelin, nor Grimbold to Grimslade, nor Halbarad to the Northlands, Dour-handed Ranger. No few had fallen, renowned or nameless, captain or soldier, for it was a great battle, and the full count of it no tale has told. So long afterward a maker in Rohan said in his song of the mounds of Munberg,
"We heard of the horns in the hills ringing, the sword shining in the south kingdom, steeds went striding to the stoning land as wind in the morning. War was kindled, there Theoden fell, Thangling mighty, to his golden halls and green pastures in the northern fields, never returning, High Lord of the Host. Harding and Guthlaf, Dunhir and Deowine, Doughty Grimbold, Herefara, and Herobrand, Horn and Fastred, fought and fell there in a far country, in the mounds of Mondberg under mould they lie, with their league fellows, lords of Gondor. Neither Heerluin the Fair to the hills by the sea, nor Furlong the Old to the flowering vales, ever to Arnach, to his own country, returned in triumph, nor the tall bowmen, Derofin and Duilin, to their dark waters, meres of Morthond, under mountain shadows. Death in the morning, and at day's ending, lords took and lowly, long now they sleep. Under grass in Gondor, by the great river, grey now as tears, gleaming silver, red then it rolled, roaring water, foam dyed with blood, flamed at sunset. As beacons mountains burned at evening, red fell the dew in Ramasehor.
Chapter 7. The Pyre of Denethor. When the dark shadow at the gate withdrew, Gandalf still sat motionless. But Pippin rose to his feet, as if a great weight had been lifted from him, and he stood listening to the horns, and it seemed to him that they would break his heart with joy. And never in after years could he hear a horn blown in the distance without tears starting in his eyes. But now suddenly his errand returned to his memory, and he ran forward. At that moment Gandalf stirred and spoke to Shadowfax, and was about to ride through the gate.
"Gandalf! Gandalf!" cried Pippin,
and Shadowfax halted.
"What are you doing here?" said Gandalf. "Is it not a law in the city that those who wear the black and silver must stay in the citadel unless their lord gives them leave?"
"He has," said Pippin. "He sent me away. But I'm frightened. Something terrible may happen up there. The lord is out of his mind, I think. I'm afraid he'll kill himself and kill Faramir, too. Can't you do something?" Gandalf looked through the gaping gate, and already on the fields he heard the gathering sound of battle. He clenched his hand.
"I must go," he said. "The Black Rider is abroad, and he will yet bring ruin on us. I have no time."
"But Faramir!" cried Pippin. "He's not dead, and they'll burn him alive if someone doesn't stop them."
"Burn him alive?" said Gandalf. "What is this tale? Be quick!"
"Denethor has gone to the tombs," said Pippin. "And he's taken Faramir, and he says,
we're all to burn, and he'll not wait, and they're to make a pyre and burn him on it, and Faramir as well. And he's sent men to fetch wood and oil. And I've told Beregond, but I'm afraid he won't dare to leave his post. He's on guard. And what can he do anyway?
So Pippin poured out his tale, reaching up and touching Gandalf's knee with trembling hands.
Can't you save Faramir?
Maybe I can, said Gandalf. But if I do, then others will die, I fear. Well, I must come, since no other help can reach him. But evil and sorrow will come of this. Even in the heart of our stronghold, the enemy has power to strike us. For his will it is that is at work.
Then, having made up his mind, he acted swiftly. And catching up Pippin and setting him before him, he turned Shadowfax with a word. Up the climbing streets of Minas Tirith they clattered, while the noise of war rose behind them. Everywhere men were rising from their despair and dread, seizing their weapons, crying one to another, "Rohan has come!" Captains were shouting, companies were mustering, many already were marching down to the gate. They met the Prince Imrahil, and he called to them,
"Whither now, Mithrander? The Rohirrim are fighting on the fields of Gondor. We must gather all the strength that we can find." "You will need every man and more," said Gandalf. "Make all haste. I'll come when I can, but I have an errand to the Lord Denethor that will not wait. Take command of the Lord's absence."
They passed on, and as they climbed and drew near to the citadel, they felt the wind blowing in their faces, and they caught the glimmer of morning far away, a light growing in the southern sky. But it brought little hope to them, not knowing what evil lay before them, fearing to come too late.
"Darkness is passing," said Gandalf, "but it still lies heavy on this city."
At the gate of the citadel they found no guard.
"Then Beregond has gone,"
said Pippin more hopefully. They turned away and hastened along the road to the closed door. It stood wide open, and the porter lay before it. He was slain, and his key had been taken.
"Work of the enemy," said Gandalf. "Such deeds he loves. Friend at war with friend, loyalty divided in confusion of hearts."
Now he dismounted, and bade Shadowfax return to his stable.
"For, my friend," he said, "you and I should have ridden to the fields long ago, but other matters delay me. Yet come swiftly if I call."
They passed the door, and walked on down the steep winding road. Light was growing, and the tall columns and carven figures beside the way went slowly by like grey ghosts. Suddenly the silence was broken, and they heard below them cries and the ringing of swords, such sounds as had not been heard in the hallowed places since the building of the city. At last they came to Rath Dinan, and hastened towards the house of the stewards, looming in the twilight under its great dome.
"Stay, stay," cried Gandalf,
springing forward to the stone stair before the door.
"Stay this madness."
For there were the servants of Denethor with swords and torches in their hands, but alone in the porch upon the topmost step stood Beregond, clad in the black and silver of the guard, and he held the door against them. Two of them had already fallen to his sword, staining the hallows with their blood, and the others cursed him, calling him outlaw and traitor to his master. Even as Gandalf and Pippin ran forward, they heard from within the house of the dead the voice of Denethor crying,
"Haste, haste, do as I have bidden. Slay me this renegade, or must I do so myself?"
Thereupon the door, which Beregond held shut with his left hand, was wrenched open, and there behind him stood the lord of the city, tall and fell. A light like flame was in his eyes, and he held a drawn sword. But Gandalf sprang up the steps, and the men fell back from him and covered their eyes, for his coming was like the incoming of a white light into a dark place, and he came with great anger. He lifted up his hand, and in the very stroke the sword of Denethor flew up and left his grasp and fell behind him in the shadows of the house, and Denethor stepped backward before Gandalf as one amazed.
"What is this, my lord?" said the wizard. "The houses of the dead are no places for the living, and why do men fight here in the hallows, when there is war enough before the gate? or has our enemy come even to Rath-Dinan?'
"'Since when has the Lord of Gondor been answerable to thee?' said Denethor. "'Or may I not command my own servants?'
"'You may,' said Gandalf. "'But others may contest your will when it is turned to madness and evil. Where is your son Faramir?'
"'He lies within,' said Denethor. "'Burning, already burning. They have set a fire in his flesh, but soon all shall be burned. The West has failed. It shall all go up in a great fire, and all shall be ended. Ash, ash and smoke blown away on the wind.'
Then Gandalf, seeing the madness that was on him, feared that he had already done some great evil, and he thrust forward, with Beregond and Pippin behind him, while Denethor gave back until he stood beside the table within. But there they found Faramir, still dreaming in his fever, lying upon the table. Wood was piled under him, and high all about it, and all was drenched with oil, even the garments of Faramir and the coverlets, but as yet no fire had been set to the fuel. Then Gandalf revealed the strength that lay hid in him, even as the light of his power was hidden under his grey mantle. He leapt up onto the faggots, and raising the sick man lightly, he sprang down again and bore him towards the door. But as he did so, Faramir moaned and called on his father in his dream. Denethor started as one waking from a trance, and the flame died in his eyes, and he wept, and he said,
"Do not take my son from me. He calls for me."
"He calls," said Gandalf, "but you cannot come to him yet, for he must seek healing on the threshold of death, and maybe find it not, whereas your part is to go out to the battle of your city, where maybe death awaits you. This you know in your heart."
"He will not wake again," said Denethor. "Battle is vain. Why should we wish to live longer? Why should we not go to death side by side?"
"Authority is not given to you, steward of Gondor, to order the hour of your death," answered Gandalf. "And only the heathen kings, under the domination of the Dark Power, did thus, slaying themselves in pride and despair, murdering their kin to ease their own death." Then, passing through the door, he took Faramir from the deadly house, and laid him on the bier on which he had been brought, and which had now been set in the porch. Denethor followed him, and stood trembling, looking with longing on the face of his son. And for a moment, while all were silent and still, watching the Lord in his throes, he wavered.
"Come," said Gandalf, "we are needed. There is much that you can yet do."
Then suddenly Denethor laughed.
He stood up tall and proud again, and stepping swiftly back to the table, he lifted from it the pillow on which his head had lain. Then, coming to the doorway, he drew aside the covering, and lo! He had between his hands a palantir. And as he held it up, it seemed to those that looked on that the globe began to glow with an inner flame, so that the lean face of the Lord was lit as with a red fire, and it seemed cut out of hard stone, sharp with black shadows, noble, proud, and terrible. His eyes glittered.
"Pride and despair!" he cried. "Didst thou think that the eyes of the White Tower were blind? Nay, I've seen more than thou knowest, grey fool, for thy hope is but ignorance. Go, then, and labour in the healing. Go forth and fight. Vanity! For a little space you may triumph on the field, for a day, but against the power that now arises there is no victory. To this city only the first finger of its hand has yet been stretched. All the east is moving, and even now the wind of thy hope cheats thee and wafts up Anduin the fleet with black sails. The west has failed. It is time for all to depart who would not be slaves."
"Such counsels will make the enemy's victory certain indeed," said Gandalf.
"Hope on, then," laughed Denethor. "Do I not know thee, Mithrandir? Thy hope is to rule in my stead, to stand behind every throne, north, south or west. I have read thy mind and its policies. Do I not know that you commanded this halfling here to keep silence? That you brought him hither to be a spy within my very chamber? And yet in our speech together I have learned the names and purpose of all thy companions. So, with a left hand thou wouldst use me for a little while as a shield against Mordor, and with a right bring up this ranger of the north to supplant me.
But I say to thee, Gandalf Mithrandir, I will not be thy tool. I am steward of the House of Anarion. I will not step down to be the dotard chamberlain of an upstart. Even were his claim proved to me, still he comes but of the line of Isildur. I will not bow to such a one, last of a ragged house long bereft of lordship and dignity.
What then would you have, said Gandalf, if your will could have its way?
I would have things as they were in all the days of my life, answered Denethor, and in the days of my long fathers before me, to be the lord of this city in peace, and leave my chair to a son after me, who would be his own master and no wizard's pupil. But if Doom denies this to me, then I will have naught. Neither life diminished, nor love halved, nor honour abated.
To me it would not seem that a steward who faithfully surrenders his charge is diminished in love or in honour, said Gandalf. And at the least, you shall not rob your son of his choice while his death is still in doubt.
At those words Denethor's eyes flamed again, and taking the stone under his arm, he drew a knife and strode toward the bier. But Beregond sprang forward and set himself before Faramir.
"So," cried Denethor, "thou hadst already stolen half my son's love. Now thou stealest the hearts of my knights also, so that they rob me wholly of my son at the last. But in this at least thou shalt not defy my will to rule my own end. Come hither!" he cried to his servants. Come, if you are not all recreant.
Then two of them ran up the steps to him. Swiftly he snatched a torch from the hand of one and sprang back into the house. Before Gandalf could hinder him, he thrust the brand amid the fuel, and at once it crackled and roared into flame. Then Denethor leapt upon the table, and standing there, wreathed in fire and smoke, he took up the staff of his stewardship that lay at his feet and broke it on his knee. Casting the pieces into the blaze, he bowed and laid himself on the table, clasping the palantir with both hands upon his breast.
And it was said that ever after, if any man looked in that stone, unless he had a great strength of will to turn it to other purpose, he saw only two aged hands withering in flame. Gandalf, in grief and horror, turned his face away and closed the door. For a while he stood in thought, silent upon the threshold, while those outside heard the greedy roaring of the fire within. And then Denethor gave a great cry, and afterwards spoke no more, nor was ever again seen by mortal men.
"So passes Denethor, son of Ecthelion," said Gandalf. Then he turned to Beregond and the lord's servants that stood there aghast. "And so pass also the days of Gondor that you have known. For good or evil they are ended. Ill deeds have been done here, but let now all enmity that lies between you be put away, for it was contrived by the enemy and works his will. You have been caught in a net of warring duties that you did not weave. But think, you servants of the Lord, blind in your obedience, that but for the treason of Beregond, Faramir, captain of the White Tower, would now also be burned. Bear away from this unhappy place your comrades who have fallen, and we will bear Faramir, steward of Gondor, to a place where he can sleep in peace, or die if that be his doom."
Then Gandalf and Beregond, taking up the bier, bore it away towards the Houses of Healing, while behind them walked Pippin with downcast head. But the servants of the Lord stood gazing as stricken men at the house of the dead. and even as Gandalf came to the end of Rath Dinan there was a great noise. Looking back they saw the dome of the house crack, and smokes issue forth, and then with a rush and rumble of stone it fell in a flurry of fire, but still unabated the flames danced and flickered amongst the ruins. Then in terror the servants fled and followed Gandalf. At length they came to the steward's door, and Beregond looked with grief at the porter.
"This deed I shall ever rue," he said, "but a madness of haste was on me, and he would not listen, but drew sword against me."
Then, taking the key that he had wrested from the slain man, he closed the door and locked it.
"This should now be given to the Lord Faramir," he said.
"The Prince of Dol Amroth is in command in the absence of the Lord," said Gandalf. "But since he is not here, I must take this on myself. I bid you keep the key and guard it until the city is set in order again."
Now at last they passed into the high circles of the city, and in the light of morning they went their way towards the houses of healing. And these were fair houses set apart for the care of those who were grievously sick. But now they were prepared for the tending of men hurt in battle or dying.